You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Thursday, December 8th. No football fans, it's not the Feast of the Immaculate Reception. I'm not sure, maybe that's Franco Harris's birthday. It is the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. The dogmatic belief stated by Pope Pius IX in 1854 on this day, the most blessed Virgin Mary was from the first moment of her conception by singular grace and privilege of Almighty God and by virtue of the merits of Jesus Christ, Savior of the human race, preserved immune from all stain of original sin. So, Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. We'll talk about that a little bit today. We'll talk particularly about it in the second hour when I have Father Alan Carter on, and we'll be breaking down the song, Mary, Did You Know? I kind of made a limited defense of the song, which I seem to do every year, earlier in the week, because it's become the season on social media for bashing the song, particularly from Catholics, whose snark potential seems to reach its fullest when talking about that song. And I'm going to try to everybody to lay down their snark guns for just a minute and listen to Father Alan and I talk about it in the second hour. We'll also have in the second hour, just before Father Alan comes on for First Cup Theology, Lavinia Spirito. Lavinia, who is one of the founders of the Catholic Way Bible Study, which is a great movement and resource if you check it out online. She's also been a longtime radio host here on Breadbox Media and its incarnation before the Real Life Radio. Has a weekend show called Real Living. She also co-hosts a show with me on the weekends called Unpacking the Gospel. Lavinia, who does a lot of speaking, not only through Catholic Way Bible Study, but at various events around the country, even really the world. She's just come back from a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, and we had tried to catch up with her on Monday while she was in Jordan, but didn't work out. So she's back in the States now. She'll tell us a little bit about her trip, and maybe it'll scratch an itch until you can actually get to the Holy Land, which is certainly one of my bucket list things as well. So we'll talk about that today. Also, a bizarre lawsuit with a legitimate point and the history of the war on Christmas. All that coming up on the program today. You are welcome to give me a call, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. But give me a call, CB, standing by today to take your calls. Would love to hear from you again, 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to chime in. I hope you had a good rest of your day yesterday. My day pretty good. I'm wrapping up a section with my Old Testament class, getting ready to give them a test tomorrow on the books of wisdom and the prophets. Yesterday, talking about the prophet Jonah. I love that story. You ever want just to laugh out loud? Sit down and read. It's four chapters, but it's only 48 verses in the book of Jonah. You can knock out in no time. You talk about the reluctant prophet. Usually most prophets in the Old Testament who were called by God didn't want the job, but for entirely different reasons than Jonah. I mean, they didn't want the job because most of them, because they felt unworthy. Or they didn't want to have the unenviable role of critiquing and preaching against their own people. Hard words that they had to speak about judgment and destruction and all the rest. Jonah's rationale, entirely different. You really don't find out till the end of the book. His rationale was, man, God, you sent me to go. I knew if I went to Nineveh, to those blasted Assyrians, and preached, and they repented, I knew you'd have mercy on them. Jonah, no room in his heart for any mercy. The Assyrians, a hated race. So that's always an interesting read. Anyway, so I did that yesterday, and then went to speak to a local parish last night, small little group of candidates and catechumens who are seeking to enter the Catholic Church, talking about marriage, which was pretty good. And then I rolled in here this morning, and CB brought me a sausage McMuffin. Man, I tell you, earning his keep. And I'm now driving. My Bonneville kind of right now, it still runs, my 99 Bonneville, sitting off to the side. I'm now driving my 2001 Taurus, which is the newest car I own, 15 years old, which looks pretty good on the outside. The problem is it's a car on borrowed time because it has a busted, whatever you call it, blown head gasket. So it's kind of like driving a ticking time bomb. $1,500 to put into it, which I'm not going to do. So we'll drive it until it wheezes and gasps its last, I guess. Anyway, let's get back to the feast day today. Very misunderstood, the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. Misunderstood on a whole host of levels, right? One thing I say to my kids in my religion class, please, for heaven's sake, if you don't remember anything else from your Catholic education, please, please, please do not think that the Immaculate Conception refers to the conception of Jesus in the womb of Mary. If it helps you, just think biology, right? If Jesus was conceived on December 8th and born on December 25th, that is a seriously warp speed pregnancy. So please, it is about the conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And you'd be amazed at the number of Catholics who don't get that. That was something that I discovered, actually, on my journey to the church, and found myself in conversation with Catholics and actually correcting them myself even before I sensed I was being drawn to the Catholic Church. December 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary. As we said, Pope Pius IX, defining dogmatically 1854, the Most Blessed Virgin Mary was from the first moment of her conception by singular grace and privilege of Almighty God, and by virtue of the merits of Jesus Christ, Savior of the human race, preserved immune from all stain of original sin. See, here's the thing, right? Because there are a lot of false ideas about this teaching. One is it's that Pope Pius IX invented it in 1854. When any reasonable reading of history will tell you that the belief had strong pockets of pious devotion in the church going back to antiquity. Typically, dogmatic definitions from either a church council or from a pope only come if there is some dispute or some need to clarify. But not only had it been around for a long, long time, even some of the earliest Protestant reformers continue to believe and affirm. Let's take Martin Luther, for example. Martin Luther said this in 1527, 10 years after he nailed the 95 Theses to the door there at the Wittenberg Cathedral. It is a sweet and pious belief that the infusion of Mary's soul was affected without original sin, so that in the very infusion of her soul, she was also purified from original sin and adorned with God's gifts, receiving a pure soul infused by God. Thus, from the first moment she began to live, she was free from all sin. This is also, I think, an example, and we'll get into this more with Father Allen, I'm sure, when we have him on the program, of where people need to make up their minds about their critique of Catholicism. Because if you've not noticed it, and there have been many who've pointed this out, including the late British Catholic G.K. Chesterton, people can't make up their mind what they don't like about the church. Either the church is too rigid or the church is too liberal, right? Either the church believes one can work its way into heaven, or we promote a sort of cheap grace. So, but the very common accusation, of course, is this idea that the church supposes that our human works can earn us a path to heaven, where the Catholic Church has always affirmed and will continue to affirm in good conscience with Protestants and their rallying cries, we're saved by grace alone. Sola gratia, saved by grace. In other words, even our works in which we do participate in God's salvation working itself out in its fullness in our souls, even those good works are prompted by and empowered by the grace of God, which is fully undeserved. So when you talk about the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary, that at the very moment of her conception, as a work of God's grace and based on the merits of Christ's own death and resurrection, which, yes, happened in history post Mary's conception, and yet the effects of them transcend history, we know that Mary's conception free from original sin was not in any way earned, deserved, or paid for by Mary herself. Who controls their own conception? No one. It was a gift from the beginning that she might be a fitting vessel to bear within herself, supplying the humanity in the hypostatic union of divinity and humanity in the one person of Jesus Christ. And so the Immaculate Conception, a complete gift of grace. This is why when the angel Gabriel greeted her at the Annunciation, her title, he did not say Hail Mary, as we say in the prayer. He said Hail, full of grace. And we'll get into this maybe in the second hour, this terminology, full of grace, what it means, how it applies to the Blessed Virgin Mary, who is, as we've said before, the prototype of what it means to be a Christian, the first one to welcome our Lord. Oh, Immaculate Conception, pray for us. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Want to learn more about Breadbox Media? Just go to breadboxmedia.com. It's that simple. Download the app. Just take a couple of minutes, and then you've got ready access on your smartphone. You got Breadbox Media in your pocket. Listen to our various contributors from around the country and across the heartland. Different personalities, temperaments, topics, all through the lens of the Catholic faith. You can also support your favorite show. Become a friend of your favorite show, whoever that favorite show might be. Hint, hint. Anyway, check it out at breadboxmedia.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast through Google Play, iTunes, and Podbean, and listen to some of our recent topics and guests. All of that and more. My question of the day today, I'm getting ready to take a road trip myself. Heading out, so I guess if there are any thieves listening to this show or to the podcast, have at it. Sorry about your luck in my home, by the way. You're going to be sorely disappointed, but I digress. Anyway, I'm heading with my family, our annual trek to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And I know what you're thinking. We've already checked it all out. And the house that my mom rents, that my sisters and I and our family stay in every year, it's still standing. But I'll give you a full report next week after I get back. We mainly stay in. We go about shopping maybe, I think, usually Sunday afternoon. It's mainly about being in close proximity to each other and trying to irritate each other as much as possible before we actually go into town, which I think most of the downtown area is intact at Gatlinburg. But as I said, I'll let you know. I know the little Catholic church, St. Mary's, is there. But anyway, whenever I travel road trip, I start thinking about snacks for the drive. And, I'm not talking about snacks that you stock up on before you leave. I'm talking about you stop there, bathroom break, gas up at the local convenience store. What is your car snack of choice? That's my question of the day. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Yeah, don't call me and give me some sort of course it's not healthy. The stuff's not healthy. Come on, it's convenience store food. That's the whole point. You know, we talked yesterday about this study done about the portion of the brain that where there's empathy and this and self-control and this interesting way of looking at the choices we make. As you know, when you exercise self-control, when you choose to delay gratification, you are showing empathy toward your future self. So that every tempting moment is, in many ways, it's a question of who's going to win, your present self or your future self. My guess is that there have been many future self losses in that showdown inside convenience stores. I know my future self went down hard last night when my wife happened to bring home from a leftover from her youth group meeting a package of fudge stripe cookies. I should never have eaten one because one quickly leads to four just before going to bed. Future self took it on the chin last night to present self. So anyway, convenience stores, this happens a lot. Love to hear from you. Here's some comments I've gotten so far, and I'll share more later. AJ says, Twizzlers, good call, my man. Don't be breaking out those red vines on me. Nasty. Twizzlers, forever. Tom says, beef jerky and Funyuns. Now, there's a good combo. Christy says, original combos. I'm a little worried about Leo. Circus peanuts? I mean, I don't mind circus peanuts. Circus peanuts are great. You ever had your car circus peanutted? Get a bag of circus peanuts, and if you want to get somebody, you take the circus peanuts, you lick the flat side and stick it against their hubcap. Pretty good. They'll stick. Anyway, so Leo likes circus peanuts and burnt peanuts. I can't go there. Let's see. Jason says pretzel combos are his fave for sure. Sometimes sunflower seeds. Yeah, I've already remarked sunflower seeds, my go-to for staying awake when I drive. I'm not anticipating that being a real problem in a little four-hour jaunt to Gatlinburg, but we'll see. So you want to chime in on that, call, text, or email. Love to hear from you on that. Perusing sports world, I see the Yankees have ponied up to bring Aroldis Chapman back into the fold. $86 million. You know, I'm kind of like my friend Jason Hall, who believes that closers are the most overpaid players in baseball. I have to have some, there's some sympathy there. Yeah, a bad closer can cost you a few games, but by and large, I mean, closing is one of those roles that a lot of guys can do. And I'm not sure, of course, the Yankees, you know, having the resources is not typically a problem for them, but we'll see whether that works out. I still think Aroldis Chapman, somebody should try to convert that guy to a starter, but I don't know. All right, so looking at NBA scores last night, Warriors going into L.A. against the Clippers, one of their chief competitors in the NBA West, and hanging a 17-point loss on the Clippers with a 20-point lead in the first quarter. And this was evidently without big games from their top players. So the Warriors serving notice right now after their opening stumble that they're not going to go quietly into that good night, and they just may become the team everyone predicted that they would become. Women's basketball, UConn over Notre Dame last night. UConn wins by 11 on the road. Would somebody finally beat this team? I mean, my goodness, how many is Gina Auriemma going to run off in a row there? That's a good question. In terms of men's college basketball, I talked yesterday about Coach Bob McKillop of Davidson. Want to get him back on the program. Davidson off to a good start this year. They've got a high-scoring Jack Gibbs They went into Chapel Hill last night and lost by 9. That's not a bad performance from the Wildcats. I'm trying to get Coach Bob McKillop on the show. Of course, he a former coach of Steph Curry when he was at Davidson, but just all-around great guy, devout Catholic, all the rest. They've got a lull now. It's kind of a lull between storms, I guess. UNC last night, and now a week from Saturday, they play Kansas. And they must have finals at Davidson, I'm sure. Imagine that. Athletes taking tests. But we'll talk to, hopefully, catch up with Bob McKillop next week and see what he thinks about this young season and what he thinks about his team, which he seems to have a good one. Let's see if there's any other thing as I'm perusing down. Oh, yeah, Willie Taggart, South Florida's coach, looks to be heading to Oregon, much to, I'm sure, Chip Kelly's dismay. Chip Kelly may have thought it was a nice fallback position to have, as he's sure to get canned by the 49ers after only one season. Be a nice little return back. You can go home again, but for Chip Kelly, he can't. So Chip Kelly out, no chance to take that job, as Willie Taggart, who really impressed at South Florida, before that at Western Kentucky, which made me aware of him, painfully aware, because he really led their resurgence. So the question now is, who goes to South Florida? Is it Charlie Strong? Is it Lane Kiffin? I don't know. CB telling me he just loves the coaching carousel. All right, let's move on to the What Were You Thinking Awards of the Day. We've got a few lined up here. Go Dumb or Go Home, as we like to say. First one, sports related. This is from Newser.com. Found woman who went missing during a half marathon. Florida's Melissa Kitcher now safe after taking wrong turn. Evidently, a Florida woman, why is it always Florida, became lost during a half-marathon trail run, was found past nightfall after wandering around a 25,000-acre park for nearly 12 hours. The Sarasota Herald Tribune reports that she was in good spirits after being found Sunday evening. She says she made a wrong turn more than 3 miles into the 13.1-mile run. Now, you know, I give my wife, Angie, a hard time. Because she has so many, she's such a better person than me on so many levels, in terms of virtue and standing before God with resumes at the end of life. I would much rather have her resume than mine. I hope she'll just wait for me while I'm in purging off my sins in purgatory for a couple of millennia. But she is directionally challenged. I mean, it's almost like there's no cumulative directional information, right? But I will say, to my wife's defense, I'm not sure that she would take a wrong turn into a half marathon and be lost for 12 hours. Race director Thierry Rolliard says he had no idea Kitcher was still on the trail until her husband called late Sunday afternoon. Well, wasn't that nice of him? You know, she's been gone for a while now. I wonder where she is. Okay. Anyway, our second nominee we're going to give to United Airlines, who evidently is now basically charging to use overhead bins. As somebody commented, what are we going to be charged for next? Oxygen? Of course, their spin is they're just giving you another tier, price tier option, to where you won't have access to the overhead bin. Crazy. That's the way to win customers. Get your name out there in a positive manner on social media. I'll give you the winner when we get back. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Uh-huh.
right at the bottom of the hour. Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show here on this Thursday, December 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. It is a holy day of obligation. I mean, not that that should be your motivation. Come on, it's your mama. It's your spiritual mama. If you're a baptized person, you really can't have God as your father without being born of God, and you can't have it without Mary being your mother. Remember, Jesus entrusted her to all his disciples there on the cross. So anyway, this is a holy day of obligation. Get your butt to Mass. I actually went last night to the vigil just before I spoke to an RCIA group. So there. Anyway, question of the day. What is your favorite road trip convenience store snack? You know, somebody's going in to pay for the gas or go to use the restroom, and they say, hey, can I get you something? What is it you're asking for? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I'll read some more responses. We get a little bit. Here we go. Yeah. Let's see. Brett says lemon pie. I'm not sure what he's talking about there. I guess something like McDonald's pie or something. Same type of thing, a little baked pie. Jessica Fez says a famous Amos chocolate chip cookies and a can of Coke. I'm with you on the can of Coke thing. I prefer an ice cold can of Coke to a bottle of Coke. I'm not sure why. Let's see. Susan says sweet hot barbecue pork rinds and ale 8. There you go. Ale 8, a local beverage if you're not from the central Kentucky area. Kind of a ginger ale-ish type of drink anyway. And, of course, the pork rinds. Classic Kentucky. Kathy says Cheetos always. Question is, do you get the, like, puffy kind or the more hard kind of fried kind? And Jennifer says honey roasted peanuts. And Laura says original combos and corn nuts. I'm glad to see somebody mention corn nuts. Very underrated snack, in my opinion. As she says, it's good to have all your own teeth. Keep eating corn nuts. I'm not sure how long you will. Anyway, back to our What Were You Thinking nominees. We went corporate by nominating United Airlines. Let's continue the trend with our winner, Nordstrom. This from an Australian news source, but I'm sure it's true here in the U.S. as well. Nordstrom is selling a stone wrapped in a leather pouch for, well, this is $114 Australian, $85 U.S. If you're struggling to find a Christmas gift for someone who has everything, the story says, an American retailer has you covered. For $85, Nordstrom is selling a stone wrapped in a leather case. Yes, you read that correctly. A paperweight, a conversation piece, a work of art. It's up to you, says the description for the handmade gift. It really is exactly as you're imagining it. It's a rock in a little leather pouch. It says, this smooth Los Angeles area stone, wrapped in rich vegetable tanned American leather, secured by sturdy contrast whip stitching, is sure to draw attention wherever it rests. So it's a rock in a bag. I mean, maybe Charlie Brown shouldn't have been so depressed. Maybe Charles Schulz was ahead of his time. I remember back, you know, I'm old enough to remember, CB's not, but I am, the pet rock craze. Sounds a little bit like that, but I don't remember a pet rock costing $85. So I'll post a link to this on the Facebook page. So, you know, if you're in a mood for a creative type of gift, yeah, that's right, creative, then check it out for sure. Anyway, let's look back in history a little bit on this day, December 8th through the ages, because besides it being the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, of course, there's some other things that have gone on over the years as well. 1765, birthday of Eli Whitney. I don't remember a lot of history, but I do remember him inventing the cotton gin, whatever that is. As we already said, 1854, this was the day Pope Pius IX proclaimed the dogma of the Immaculate Conception. Let's see, 1925. Happy birthday to the late Sammy Davis Jr. The Candyman can. 1933, Flip Wilson, the late comedian, was born on this day. His Geraldine. I used to do, when I was a little boy, I would get all dressed up and entertain my great aunts with my imitations of Flip Wilson. Yeah, thankfully there were no cameras back then. 1943, Jim Morrison, the late door singer, born. Vatican II closed in 1965. 1973, on this day, the 39th Heisman Award given to John Cappelletti of Penn State, who promptly dedicated and gave the trophy to his little brother Joey, who was dying, I believe, of leukemia. I still remember the made-for-TV movie about that. You think Brian's song elicits tears. My goodness, John Cappelletti's speech where he bawls about his brother. Now that'll get you every time. 1977, happy birthday to, I'm sorry, the 43rd Heisman Trophy Award, 1977, to Earl Campbell. Man, boy, he was a beast. He gave every, you know, we talked about yesterday, Larry Bird saying he knew his career would be short because of the way he threw his body into everything. I'm sure the same was true with Earl Campbell. John Lennon shot to death on this day in 1980 outside his New York City apartment. Former Beatle was 40. Philip Rivers, 35 today. As I commented over the weekend, I have great respect for Philip Rivers and his Catholic faith. He's a great witness to the faith. He and his wife, very open to life, big family. But as a football opponent, and he was playing my Tampa Bay Bucks, he does have a face you'd kind of like to punch. So, Philip Rivers, happy birthday today. And let's see, 1993, President Bill Clinton signed into law the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, which I'm guessing Donald Trump's not really a fan of, at least hasn't seemed to be. Anyway, so that's a little walk through history. Speaking of Donald Trump, made another appointment yesterday to his cabinet, the head of the EPA, actually a guy who's from right here where we broadcast from originally, from Lexington, Kentucky. Pruitt, I believe, Scott Pruitt. What's kind of odd, I mean, this is a guy that you put in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency who doesn't believe in, believes, you know, that climate change is basically a hoax perpetuated by the Chinese. And this is the guy that you're putting in charge now of the Environmental Protection Agency. And of course, there have been a lot of criticism saying he's in the petroleum industry's back pocket and so forth. And, you know, any sort of climate or ecological regulations are not going to happen now. And it's going to be a real step backward for the U.S. and all the rest. I mean, this is exactly, I mean, Donald Trump ran on this, right? And so he's simply doing what he said he was going to do. I think it's a little disconcerting myself. You're not going to find in me a worshiping at the altar of science. Okay, I'm fully aware that there are a lot of things that go into the motivations of scientists. It's not just this the pure search for knowledge and all this stuff. But for me, it's hard to believe when like 97%. I think, of various scientific fields affirm that human beings are having an effect on the climate. It's hard for me to imagine that it's a conspiracy. I mean, 97% is a pretty high number. And, you know, you look around and it's pretty hard to deny, I think, that there are some things happening that are very disconcerting. Yes, the Earth goes through cycles. I get that and everything. But to me, it's simply basic ecology and common sense. If you can do things to reduce the impact of human activity on the environment, even if you don't believe climate change is real, it's simply good stewardship. And it's, again, you know, we talk about self-control. We talk about it as it is a it's an empathy with your future self to choose to delay gratification, knowing that the benefits will come down the road. It's a sign of maturity. In the same way, when it comes to things like, you know, basic ecology and the use of the environment and resources and so forth, it is in many ways a present us. We need to have empathy for our future us or for those who come after us in terms of the decisions that we make. So to me, I'd count me among those who think this is a troubling pick as the new head of the EPA. Time Magazine, meanwhile, giving Donald Trump the Person of the Year award. Time's always insisted that their Person of the Year award is not meant to be any sort of endorsement necessarily of a person. I think it's pretty hard to argue with Time's choice. I mean, again, love him or loathe him, the guy has had a tremendous impact on the world and promises to in the years ahead. It's a pretty remarkable story. I mean, you can see some of these clips of people a year ago all writing him off as a serious candidate. Nice president-elect of the United States. So, like I said, hard to argue with that choice as Person of the Year. We'll be back with more on the other side of the break. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Feast of the Immaculate Conception. 17 shopping days left until Christmas. So after going to Mass today, if you get an opportunity, get out there and get a head start on your gift buying. Of course, it's still early for me. You know, I thrive better under pressure. At least that's what I tell myself. If you want to chime in, asking a question of the day, what's your favorite road trip convenience store snack? And when you pull in, I'm not talking about something you make at home and then take on the road, which that's not bad either. I mean, my wife makes a pretty killer trail mix, I will have to say. But something you're picking up in the convenience store, need a little snackage, what's it going to be? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I saw a great post this morning from my friend Charlie Camozzi, who's been a guest on the program before. Got a lot of respect for Charlie. He teaches at Fordham. He's a Catholic professor there. Does a lot of work speaking out on pro-life issues, and particularly from a Catholic perspective, whole life pro-life, right? I mean, the dignity of the human person. We've made this false schism, dichotomy, whatever you want to call it, somehow in the church, to where those who promote what are sometimes called social justice concerns and those who promote, pro-life stuff related to, let's say, abortion, for example, that they're two different camps, when really they shouldn't be. I mean, it's all interwoven. And to truly be a Catholic with a vision of the human person and the dignity of the human person needs to be concerned with all assaults on human dignity. Charlie Camozzi, a great spokesperson for that type of thing, and he was very vocal in the days leading up to the presidential election that, you know, to be pro-life means more than just being against abortion, though that's important. But don't ever question Charlie Camozzi's commitment to opposing the abortion crisis and Holocaust, really, in this country. In fact, he wrote this on Facebook, Charlie Camosi. He said, if I had to guess, I'd say a sizable number of my Facebook friends find it somewhere between pretty annoying and genuinely puzzling that I focus so much of my research, writing, and activism on abortion, especially when they know I care so much about other issues. He says, allow me to share a quick story which might help explain why. Camosi says, tonight I was on an excellent panel at St. Catherine's Parish in Riverside, Connecticut, on faith and the common good after the election. He said, as part of my remarks, as you might imagine, I made it clear how important it is that we find more and better ways to protect prenatal children and their mothers. He said, after the panel, a number of people stayed after to talk with me and the other panelists. At a certain point, a man probably in his 70s and his son probably in his 30s came over. He said the older man had tears in his eyes as he explained how much it meant to him to have a professor stand up for life, and particularly the life of his son, who very clearly has Down syndrome. He explained that his wife had died and that this was his only son. He said about 30 seconds into this father gushing about his boy's accomplishments, the younger man simply grabbed me and hugged me as hard as I've been hugged by anyone. It was a hug that, yes, demonstrated affection and gratitude, but I got the very strong sense that it also came from fear and the need for protection/security. Camosi says, given today's rhetoric and practices surrounding abortion and children with Down syndrome, which I'll just say as an aside, statistics are that 90% of unborn children diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted in the womb. 90%, folks. Camosi says, given today's rhetoric, one can understand why this young man felt this way. It was one of the most moving moments of my life and reminded me why, despite all the challenges and frustrations that come with it, I will never, ever stop fighting for protection of the most vulnerable from the horrific, barbaric practice of abortion in the United States. Wow. You go, Charlie Camosi. You go. Because the truth is, you know, there are going to be critics on both sides. And I don't know whether that's a sign that you're doing things right when you take it from both the right and the left. But Charlie Camosi certainly has by saying that, you know, to be a Catholic, to be a pro-life Catholic doesn't mean we can give it just kind of a shrug and a wink to other issues that are clearly assaults on the dignity of the human person. Things like torture or the way we treat our immigrants, and concern for the poor. And so he takes hits from those sorts of folks. And then Camosi also takes hits from those on the left who are perfectly willing to argue about the dignity of the human person under assault in those other areas, but are just too kind of, they're uncomfortable talking about abortion. They're uncomfortable talking about the rights of the unborn or so forth. So, man, Charlie Camosi, you go, indeed. And, and we never, being a whole life pro-life should never mean in any way minimizing or reducing. Yeah, this is where our opposition to abortion, this is where, I probably take some issue. Here's another false dichotomy, in my opinion, is that we address the abortion issue by trying to limit either supply or demand. So like those on the supply end, those are the ones who are working hard in the legislative arena trying to get laws passed that make it harder and harder to get abortions, if not downright impossible. Then you got those who say, no, we don't need to worry about supply. That's futile. Abortions are always going to happen. We need to worry on the demand end so that, women in crisis pregnancies find themselves not in desperate places so that they don't end up choosing abortion. But see, I think taking an either or approach to that is problematic because I think to think again that simply changing laws is going to change hearts is completely is not true. Those who say that abortions will still happen are absolutely right, because this is where you can't legislate morality. This is the sliver of truth in that statement, though it's got big problems, is that, yes, the law can make effect, but ultimately it'll only go so far in terms of changing hearts. At the same time, those who argue that you don't have to worry about supply forget the fact that the law is a teacher, and it is an expression in a democratic society of what we value as a culture. So in my view, it's both. You address both supply and demand, and we need to avoid, I think, these false dichotomy, these stark either-ors, in my opinion. Okay, really strange story that came out yesterday about Sofia Vergara, the Modern Family star. This from the British Telegraph. Actress Sofia Vergara is being sued. Sofia Vergara is being sued by her fertilized eggs, the New York Post has reported. On Thursday, a Right to Live lawsuit has been filed on behalf of the fertilized eggs, listed as plaintiffs Emma and Isabella in Louisiana court papers. The report comes amid an ongoing custody battle between Mrs. Vergara and former fiancé Nick Loeb over the two female embryos which they created through IVF, in vitro fertilization, during their relationship. The embryos remain frozen at a fertility clinic in Beverly Hills. You want a little snapshot of one of the reasons why the Catholic Church will always put its foot down in resistance to in vitro fertilization or any type of ex utero manipulation of human fertility? It's the contention that the Church has always made that it will inevitably lead to the commodification of human life. And this is what you have. You've got embryos, or as we understand it as Catholics, human persons, frozen in a fertility clinic sitting there in Beverly Hills. As it says here, the case has become a touchstone in America for discussion about issues, including when life starts, who should have the power to end it, and whether men should have the same rights as women over frozen embryos. According to the Post sources, the new lawsuit contends that Emma and Isabella, by not being born, have been deprived of an inheritance from a trust that has been created for them. The lawsuit, which reportedly also lists James Carbonette, the embryo's trustee, as a plaintiff, could be a landmark case in traditionally pro-life Louisiana, where an in vitro fertilized egg is legally recognized as a juridical person until it is implanted in the womb. The lawsuit asks that the frozen embryos be given to Mr. Loeb so that they can live and receive the trust fund set up for them. Now, you read this, and at first glance, you think, this is crazy. How can fertilized eggs sue anybody? So, you know, and so forth. But they have advocates. At least in this case, they have an advocate. So there's something legitimate here, right? These are human persons who have rights, human persons who are frozen currently, because our present self not only didn't care about future self, but didn't care about other future selves that could be affected. We'll be back with a new hour. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.